Welcome to the Global Product Management Talk. This is Cindy F. Solomon, your host for today's episode and weekly episodes. Today is March 25th, 2013, Monday. I'm broadcasting live out of the Oakland Hills from Studio 132. And you're listening to music from Blame Sally. www.blamesally. The music is courtesy of Blame Sally, who are performing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on May 11th, 2013. Go get tickets now. I will be there at that concert. The Global Product Management Talk is a discussion of vital issues affecting professionals passionate about products, business process, product management, startups, marketing, innovation, and excellence. You can find us on the web at www.prodmgmttalk.com. That's our Twitter handle, at prodmgmttalk. And if you're tweeting today, use the pound sign, prodmgmttalk. And if you are tweeting or would like to call in to join us on the talk, you can call in to 323-927-2957. And BZ Lewis, our engineer, will screen your call and bring you on. Also, I'm told that if you are listening live, the best experience is to call in and just listen on your phone on the line. 323-927-2957. Today, I'm delighted to have Rich Marinoff on the call. This is seems to be his annual thing to join us. He was on the show exactly a year ago. Rich Marinoff is a startup entrepreneur, an author, technologist, and the founder of Product Camp Silicon Valley, which was the first product camp. And this past Saturday was the sixth annual Product Camp Silicon Valley at eBay down in San Jose. And it was a great, incredible day. We'll talk more about that coming up. But first, a shout out to thank our sponsors. Our premier sponsor is the AIPMM, the Association of International Product Marketing and Management. Follow them on the web at AIPMM, where they list product management opportunities, jobs and employments from excellent companies nationwide and even internationally. They were founded in 1998. They promote worldwide excellence in product management education, training, certification, professional networking opportunities, and credentials to forward your career. They have members in 65 countries, and they are the worldwide certifying body of product team professionals. They offer the Agile Certified Product Manager, ACPM, Certified Product Manager, Certified Product Marketing Manager, Certified Brand Manager, Certified Innovation Leader, and programs that allow individuals to demonstrate their level of expertise. Check them out at www.aipmm.com. If you're looking for a product management solution, check out Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going, watch how it's going with sprint.ly. Sprintly is project management software that brings in the entire corporation to the software development process by showing managers and non-engineers a top-level view of what the programmers are doing. Check them out at sprint.ly. Shout out to our Australian colleagues at brainmates.com, boosting people and product performance. Subscribe to their newsletter, read popular brain rants, learn about their consulting and mentoring approach to forward your product management career and methods at BrainMates and BrainMates.com on the web. Sponsumo solves the headaches of managing conferences and other events and allows you to focus on relationships and sales. Sign up for a trial account at Sponsumo.com, Sponsumo.com. And if you're in the SF Bay Area, or if you want to bring startup product meetups to your community, Startup Product is a movement for product excellence through cross-discipline collaboration and holistic product perspective. There's a life cycle that every product, startup, idea, and project passes through to be realized. Focusing on where the product is in its life cycle enables a conversation that brings us all together on what will serve the product most to arrive at product market fit, sustain growth, and generate revenue streams. StartupProduct.com, on the web at StartupProduct. And last week, the Startup Product Talks meetup was launched in San Mateo at Marketo. By the way, Marketo has a lot of open positions. They're looking for a VP of product management. Check them out at marketo.com/jobs. Okay. I'm Cindy F. Solomon, your host. You can follow me on Twitter at Cindy F. Solomon. I produce the product management talk tweets and Storify. By the way, if you haven't gotten to a product camp yet, go over to storify.com/prodmgmttalk. I capture the tweets, the content, the pictures from product camps all over the world and maintain the global map of product camps. I just put up the tweets from Saturday's product camp, and you can view them either in chronological order or on my blog. You can view them as a slideshow, cindyfsolomon.blogspot.com. Okay, today we are talking with Rich Marinoff, who is a seasoned product executive, startup entrepreneur, author, technologist, founder of Product Camp Silicon Valley. And he says that Silicon Valley is bubbling up with people who have the right ideas and are seeking out customers, in contrast to the engineering-driven approach of build it and they will come. He says that great product management thinking is to ask, how do we get urgently needed validated ideas and product concepts that customers want to buy before we get down the road in product development? So let me tell you about Rich Marinoff. And I must say that he is the reason why probably the Global Product Management Talk exists. He is the inspiration. He started Product Camps, and we'll chat about, we crossed paths for a couple of weeks at the same company many, many years ago, and that was my entree into realizing that product management was a way to have a career trajectory. So Rich is a seasoned software executive and serial entrepreneur. He's held the position of the product guy at six tech startups, including as CEO and VP of marketing and products. He founded the first Product Camp, which is now a worldwide movement. And Product Bytes, B-Y-T-E-S, is his long-running series on software startups, product strategy, Silicon Valley, and the inner life of product managers. His book, The Art of Product Management, captures the best of Product Bytes and represents a scrappy entrepreneur in all of us. I also suggest The Art of Product Management for anyone who wants to understand what product management is and how to become a product manager. Rich guest lectures at business schools and executive education programs around the world. He served on the board of the Silicon Valley Product Management Association, and he chaired the first product manager slash product owner tracks at Agile Alliance's annual conference. He has a BS in physics from Yale and an MBA from Stanford. He's an in-demand speaker for business, executive, and technical audiences. It is a real honor to have him on the show. His website is at marinoff.com, M-I-R-O-N-O-V. You can follow him on Twitter at Rich Marinoff. Rich, are you still there?
I am still here. I'm so impressed with whoever it is that we're talking about. So that's great. Thanks so much.
Thanks. And, you know, that's a great point, though. It's one of the reasons why I'm doing this also, is product managers are humble, and you are of one of the most humblest people. And we need to raise the visibility for other people to know what we're doing. And at first I thought I was educating product managers, but no, I'm educating people who aren't product managers to appreciate what product managers do and who product managers are. So what did I miss in pointing out in the intro?
I think you covered a lot of ground. Thanks. You know, I've been doing product management so long that when I started, dinosaurs were still roaming Cupertino. And, you know, the Macintosh hadn't been launched yet, for those people who are old enough to remember what year that was and the TV commercial that went with it. So, you know, it's a pleasure to see the movement happening and, you know, people staying on board. And I'm reminded almost every day about trying to pay it forward and help other people, and, you know, they help you later on. And, you know, we have our own little product management tribe that we support and that we, you know, help people into, and it's really all about the community. So,
yes, about the community, which, so tell us, what is Product Camp? So people who are listening are a cross-section of business people, professionals, from all walks. So let's
sure.
give them a taste of, it's actually, I think I have it posted as Q1. I'm going to tweet it out. By the way, if you are tweeting, use the hashtag #PomPierreODMGMTTALK and tell us where you're tweeting from. So go ahead.
Let me go back and sort of recap the first Product Camp story. So I had been to some of the things that they call bar camps or developer camps. So, you know, if we're going back to the middle 2000s, you know, I got to go to a lot of events that were really for developers, from developers, sharing on an unconference model. Certainly the Riley folks with their foo camps and such. And it was developers getting together, you know, in large and larger and even larger groups, forming up real-time agendas about things they cared about, you know, whether that was deep intricacies of operating systems or porting code or web UI, whatever, and they'd break off into groups and have conversations and presentations and sharing about the things they cared about, which was wonderful. Honestly, as the only product manager in a sea of 300 or 500 developers, I felt pretty lonely. You know, there's a moment when you have to do something about it. A couple of my business partners, particularly Luke Homan at Entheosis, pushed me hard to say, you know, if you think one of these things has to happen, you know, get up out of your chair and make it happen. And so we were lucky enough to be the first organizers at Yahoo. So this is 6 years ago. This puts us back to 2008. And we got Yahoo to lend us their training facility for Saturday, and we got something on the order of 175 product managers to give up their Saturdays to collect as a group, to collectively create some topics and vote in some discussions, to have a really good time and a T-shirt and a sandwich, and to network with each other, to teach each other, to help each other, and... You know, like everything else, the facilitating is really just a small portion of making it happen. So really exciting. I couldn't imagine 175 product management, product marketing folks turning out on a Saturday. Obviously, that's gotten bigger. By the way, I'm thrilled to not have been the organizer of this year's Silicon Valley Product Camp or any of the other ones around the world. I think there are maybe 25 or 30 different cities. One coming up in Dublin, I'm excited about. But you know, people picking up the challenge and putting events together where they can learn and share and network and find jobs and find friends and talk to people who are in the tribe. Every place I go, I find individual product managers stuffed in corners and closets next to their development teams, not knowing that there are hundreds of other product managers out there who are sharing the same issues and experiences, who could share tools and learning. And so Product Camp is just a great way to get yourself and your local community together. The thought here, actually, there was a newsman here on one of the local radio stations on KFOG named Scoop Nisker, and he was very famous for saying, if you don't like the news, go out and make some of your own. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the perfect Product Camp model. It says, if you don't have a Product Camp near you and you want one, You go out and you make one of your own.
That's right. And so that's totally the inspiration for the Global Product Management Talk. It started as a Twitter chat for people who were doing product management but situated all over the world. Hey, we should use tools. It was really, I was trying to figure out how to use Twitter effectively and realized that there were Twitter chats where people could just log on and start talking, and I started formalizing them and really based on a mini product camp. It's the idea of the original Twitter chats were to have it be a presenter with people talking at the same time and digitize the experience of an unconference.
That's great. And it's funny how things come full circle because, you know, it was great. I really enjoyed myself. I was thrilled to go down to the Silicon Valley Product Camp on Saturday. And funny, one of my former partners from Entheosys, Scott Gilbert, is back on the stage 6 years later, along with Jen Berkeley for SVPMA, as hosting this year's Product Camp. So, you know, it's you think you're out, they pull you back in.
Right. And by the way, there's more than 20 product camps. So I maintain the Google map of global product camps. There's 30 of them worldwide. Or there's 30 locations. Not all of them happen annually, but there has been 30 different locations, and you can zoom in on that map to see them. And then there's locations like Austin that are doing them more than once a year.
Right. Austin's a great city, and there's great tech there, and I'm really impressed with the product management core of people, some really smart folks who make this happen all the time. So, great. Here we are.
Okay, so that is what Product Camp is. So, you mentioned a little bit what has happened since the first Product Camp. Oh, and I think it's important to note is Product Camp is also free.
Yeah. That seemed really important to us. I mean, there have always been a lot of paid conferences which bring in, you know, professional speakers and have long lead times and have, you know, pretty important attendance fees to pay for that. And we thought, and of course, different product camps have made different choices on this, but we thought it was really important to get enough sponsorship dollars and participation to be able to put a lunch and a T-shirt and a couple of gifts on the table, and people can show up and they don't need to pay for it. It really is free, with thanks to all the sponsors.
And all the volunteers. So do you know what the stats were for Saturday's event? I know that I think they shut down registration at 800, and it was something like 500 people were on the waiting list.
Yeah, so there were 1,000 registration slots online, and there were 500 people on the waiting list. I don't have any idea. I'll wait to see the numbers for how many people showed up, but I do know that there was quite a queue to get in the door early on. So, you know, the only barrier here is honestly it's the fire marshal, and it's finding a big enough place to be.
Right.
So if there's anybody listening who has a 2,000 person or larger venue, they're not using next March on a Saturday, drop us a line.
Well, there are the conference venues, but we just have to, I guess, get big enough sponsors to warrant
or
that.
I think we just need to find the VP of product management at some company with a big enough venue and make some sweet plea here.
Right. So, yeah, and, you know, it's also spawned lots of different meetups in organizations. So in San Francisco, there's Startup Product Meetup. We meet monthly. You've spoken there as well.
Sure. And just to give credit where due, so on the development side of the world and the lean startup side of the world and such, they, you know, there are a tremendous number of meetups, and we get to ride along on their good infrastructure and their good thinking and inspiration. So, you know, it's not like this all comes from us. We get to copy and take credit for a lot of good things.
Oh, totally. Well, that's how these things work. Hey, if it's working, certainly from the marketing and getting the word out and extending the visibility, this is what marketing at its best. For me, the web and applications are finally delivering on the promise of the web to be a communication vehicle, to bring people together across borders and to break down the barriers.
And at the end of, you know, every one of these big events, you know, we try to sit down and ask the hard questions. You know, what went well? What should we do more of? You know, what could we change, improve? What didn't go so well? You do the retrospective, you spin it up next time, and it gets a little better.
For sure. So, jumping over, and just a shout-out to a couple of our tweeters, at Game Miller Team, welcome. They're retweeting, and at March Tijan Atel, welcome. So here's the thing that Q3 I'm posting is product management and art. Given you wrote the book on the art of product management, and I see you as an artist in this realm.
So I chose the word art in that title carefully because there's a lot of books that would have started with the word science, right? And honestly, I see product management much more, I'll use the word craft, because when you're learning a craft, it's usually a lot of discussions about shadowing and mentoring and learning how to do it while doing it, as opposed to book learning. And while I love and respect and join in many times with the folks who are doing 1- and 2- and 3-day product management training, honestly, I can't tell you that I think that makes you a product manager, right?
I agree. It doesn't.
Yeah,
if anything, it maybe
doesn't.
Gives you an overview of where you must go deeper if you want to be serious.
And I see the challenge here on a lot of fronts. One is there are a lot of people who either want to be product managers or for reasons that I don't understand, or think they want to be product managers. And it's really hard to get in because, as I was writing back in January, almost every job posting for a product management opening says that they're looking for people with previous product management experience, specifically a product management title. So how do you ever break in when you can't get the title without having the title? And how do you learn how to do this job when the books are all insufficient, when the nature of product strategy and working with people are such that you don't learn them out of books so much? And so if I think of some of the places where I've done a better job of managing and training and mentoring product teams working for me, it was all about, for instance, making sure that we had a time every single week, you know, call it a staff meeting so that nobody else knows, where we would share what was going on, share tools, talk about problems. You know, almost all the issues were not technical. They were about people and organizations and understanding markets and trying to sort the smart customers with really good insights from the other kind of customers. Very much experience-based, very much hands-on. And, you know, there's a whole series of mistakes that almost every product manager makes her first time out, his first time out. For instance, you're in that really tough meeting with the big customer who says, I'll sign the huge purchase order and give it to your sales rep if you commit right this minute in this meeting to the 3 or 4 enhancements I need. And if you haven't been through that meeting a few times, gosh, you just say yes because the pressure is so high. And then you go back and find out that they're all impossible or they completely break your roadmap, and you never again make a commitment to a customer without checking back with your development team and looking at what it's going to do to your backlog and having time to think. But I know everybody makes that mistake once. So, you know, how do we steepen the learning curve and soften the blows of learning how to do this? It's a challenge, and I do think it's an art, it's a craft. It's it's integrated, coherent thinking as you pull together market data and customer issues and executive dreams with the harsh reality of what our team can build and what our team can build on time and which ones are going to generate money. And that's a, it's not a rote exercise. I get asked all the time for a strategy template, a product strategy template. And I just know that if such a product strategy template existed, then every product would have the same strategy. And we just know that's impossible. So what we're trying to do is find patterns, but not really templates. So, you know, how do we teach patterns? How do we teach thinking? How do we teach critical analysis? I think one piece at a time.
For sure. And, you know, there's something else. When I think of you, I think of integrity. And that goes back to our first crossing many, many years ago when we were at the same company, the first, really my first brush with recognizing or understanding what product management is and does was from watching you and your being frustrated every time I saw you, was walking through your area. And also you brought in a consultant, Barb, who I had the opportunity to have lunch with on many occasions, and she was explaining to me what she was doing and what product management was about. And you left that company, and I remember, I think, seeing you on your way out, and it was about integrity, that you felt that the company didn't have, you couldn't stay there and do the job that you came to do because there wasn't the support or there wasn't the environment to support you in doing that. And that stayed with me, and I know that was, when I look to how do I want to position myself or what kind of legacy do I want to have when I think about my career, that was a major point for me, that I want to feel that in all of my efforts I've had integrity and I've made a difference, even if no one knew about it.
Let me tell a little bit of that story and some of the backstory, and I think. And this is something I'm lucky enough to have the ability to do, and for folks who do, I think they value it, and folks who don't have it yet, they'll get there. But it's really important, and particularly in a product management job, to be able to stand up on a chair and say what's true and what's reasonable and what's practical. And sometimes not everybody wants to hear it, and sometimes... As the old punch card guys would say, that's end of job. But that's okay, because for me, you know, there's a lot of work out there. There's a lot of great companies in the Valley. And I think we make the decision every single day as we go into our jobs, whether we, on the one hand, have enough passion about what we're doing to do a great job, and on the other hand, if our company can provide us the tools that we can match with our passion so that we can do a great job. And if you're missing one of those two things, you need to think really hard about where you're going to park your car that day, assuming you're driving. So this was and I won't use their name, and they're not on my resume because I was only there 6 weeks, but it was a small subsidiary of a very big, famous company, and they had courted me rather heavily, and I came in a VP product management job to find that the dreams of being spun out were, in fact, unlikely to zero probability, and that the product really wasn't where it was supposed to be, and the team was missing, and the executives were pretty confused about where they were going. And it was obvious to me by, let's say, the middle of the afternoon on day one, that the things I had come there to do were probably never going to happen. And again, I was lucky enough to have some economic backing. A wonderful spouse who at that time was supporting me in case I needed to step out. And so I was able to go back to the folks who hired me, and at the end of, I think I waited a whole week, but at the end of the Friday, to say, this is a mistake. I will spend the next 5 weeks helping you restructure and helping you make changes and looking for a replacement for myself, and doing everything I can to leave the campsite cleaner than when I found it. But we're not going to do this. This is just, it's not going to work for me, and what I'm bringing is really not what you want. And, you know, effectively I stood up on the chair and said, no, I pulled the red handle. I have a lot more freedom to do that these days, you know, and over the years, often I've come in as a consultant, and the answer is, here's what we should do. Here are my strong recommendations. Let's work on them. But you can let me go at any moment, right? Here's the door. So if the things I'm saying are unpopular or unpalatable, well then, you know, let's decide to split. And again, putting my product management hat on, I feel like I have to accurately represent whether we're going to ship on time, whether the customers are going to enjoy and use the product and pay us money for it, whether we're putting unreasonable goals up for our teams, are we hiring the wrong people, are we misorganized. In the product management job, I get to, and I think all of us get to, own success, even if it's shared, as it always is, and to be clear, precise speakers of what we need to do to make life better. And there's risk in that every day, but for me, that's, gosh, why else go to the office?
Yes, and at that same company, I didn't have the retrospect to realize that I was also brought in for an ideal that the company wasn't able to support. So I just dug in my heels and went about. I was championing the website and taking it from a technical support website into a product marketing vehicle. And so I hung around for a lot longer, but again, they didn't know what I was doing. I was under the radar.
and flipping to the other side, I mean, you know, you've got to applaud all the people who are hardworking, diligent, and are going to try to change that company or the place they're at from the inside every single day, and their persistence. Because, you know, some would listen to that last discussion and say, you know, Rich didn't stick with it. You know, he should have tried harder and longer. Giving up isn't a strategy. And I think that's fair. And I think if you're able to make change and you're able to move product and process and people ahead and deliver revenue on great products, you know, you can, you should, you must. And everybody makes their own call on when it's untenable. So that one, I think, was my shortest stop ever in my career. And again, you won't ever see it on my resume, and there's no footprint. So other than Cindy, nobody knows. Shh.
Right, and I'm not mentioning the name, but see, for me, it was my first executive position in the Valley. I had just come to the Valley. So for me, it was the beginning of my career. You're way ahead in terms of, executive position. So
it's great to be, it's great to be a role model, however briefly.
Yes,
so.
Yes.
Good.
So moving on, and in regarding, so at Product Camp, Alicia, who came from Product Camp DC. And by the way, she came to the dinner the night before. I host a annual pre-Product Camp dinner, but sponsored by the AIPMM. Always have to put in my plugs. So she was wearing a unicorn pin, and she was asking me where you were. I turned around, and you were there from a sea of 700 people. So
we should tell the should tell the Alicia unicorn story, right?
Yes, please.
I've been spending a lot of time over the last, oh gosh, call it a year, thinking about and working with clients and friends on the problems of how do we hire into product management jobs, how do we get really good people to fill the positions we've got, how do we think about the promotion ladder, and in particular, when we're writing job descriptions for open product management positions, are we under or over specifying? So I had a colleague of mine back in early January go out on the net. So, you know, what does the market say? The right question is, what does the market say about hiring criteria? And a nice guy named Colm Shalvey did some research for me, and he pulled 41 current postings of technology product managers at B2B and B2C companies all over the U.S. and did a bunch of analysis that we had plotted out, which was to ask the questions of what are hiring managers looking for. And, you know, it wasn't that surprising to find out that, you know, something like 93% of them wanted previous product management experience, and that, you know, a good two-thirds were looking for undergraduate degrees in computer science or EE. You know, so what else do we have? I'm just looking at my list here. 88% called out market segment expertise. So if we're in disk drives, we want somebody who knows disk drives. If we're in point-of-sale systems, we want somebody who knows point-of-sale systems. 93% clearly asked for excellent verbal and written skills. A third wanted MBAs. You go down the list, and when you draw the little Venn diagram of who are the people qualified for this, the answer is nearly nobody. So I call them unicorns. Working with some folks in one of the major Texas markets, and we weren't sure we could find anyone who met our very stringent qualifications. You know, hence unicorns are rare and maybe non-existent. And Alicia had seen this post and was at a South by Southwest event where she had a unicorn button made, picture of a unicorn, right off of the post that I had put up. And it's been our little joke on Twitter about that. We actually never met until this weekend at Product Camp. But it worries me that I see so many open positions for senior product managers with qualifications that can't be met, or at least are very, very difficult to meet, because I think we've overspecified and overdrawn those lines a bit, and we're missing out on great talent.
Well, and also, these companies think that domain knowledge is the most important, and of course it is. But there's a lot of skills to product management that are transferable from product to product that might be key.
Yeah, I actually think that's the wrong order, because I think one of the things you do every single day as a product manager, or you should be doing if you're doing that job, is you're meeting customers, you're trying products, you're looking at competitors, you're understanding what's going on, and if you're any good as a product manager, you should be able to get up to speed on a new product in, you know, call it 90 days, right? And if we limit ourselves to the existing product managers at our current competitors and very near competitors, it's a very small pool, and it's people who believe the same thing we believe. And, you know, I would put solid product management experience ahead of subject matter expertise, because I think you can learn a new market a whole lot faster than you can learn how to be a product manager. Now, I do think the big gap between the B2B and B2C worlds, I'm a B2B guy and my instincts are pretty bad about consumer kinds of applications. So, you know, I'll give you that. But if you're coming out of network security, you know, there's certainly enough adjacent B2B markets like storage and cloud applications that you shouldn't be breathing that hard. So I just think that's too narrow, and it assumes that the thing that you need to do most as a product manager is know your market instead of discover your market. And that's a very static view of whatever folks have been building is what we need to keep building.
Let me underline that. So most of the job qualifications, the way they're written, they're looking for, or they think they're looking for, product managers who already know the market. But it is key to hire people who know how to do product management and know how to discover, listen, and go out and find the market.
Yeah. So let me, for a minute, erase the whole product management label. And, you know, if you come out of the lean startup world, you may not have anybody with that title, although I think you should. You know, if we think hard about the customer development cycle that, you know, particularly Steve Blank has been the longtime champion of, it's about identifying a potential need, not yet building product, going out into the world and finding out what's true or what's more true than what you knew. You know, get your butt out of the building. And then, again, the key product management activity is to match three things. One is, are there customers out there who want this, for whom it solves a problem? Two, is it something we think we can profitably do? In other words, is there money to be made doing this activity or shipping this product? And three, can we build it? Does our team have the right inputs? And again, just circling back to that point, if we assume that the next product we need to, or the next major enhancement to our product is uncertain, and that the way we figure out whether we need to build it is we validate it with real customers in the market before we burn the next 100 developer years, right? Then we have to assume that our knowledge of our current market is old or suspect, right? It's not important what I think. It's important what's true. But anyway, just making the point again, because I think it's really important. If you already believe you have perfect knowledge about your market, then you're either building something old or you're building the wrong thing. And if you as a product manager or anybody who's doing that kind of job isn't getting out and rubbing elbows with real customers and real prospects every single week, let's say 3 or 5 times, then what you're doing is you're assuming more surety than you have, and you're inviting the strategic catastrophe at the end where the thing you ship is not what the market wants. In fact, there's an old story I've been using a long time a 10-year-old post that's in the book about something I call the post-course correction, right?
The post-what correction?
Post-course correction,
okay.
Right. And it's the very short version of it is if you were NASA and you wanted to put a capsule with some people on the moon, what you do all along the way is you have these tiny little steering jets, right? And you make little adjustments all along the way. You call those things mid-course corrections. And they don't take much fuel and they don't take much energy. But if you do them early, the steering's pretty easy. The alternative is what I call the post-course correction, which is you built the product, you brought it to market, and honestly, you missed the moon completely, right? Not what the market wants. This is where you're out of radio range and out of oxygen and almost out of fuel. And you're not technically dead, but you can see it from where you are. The old model of build it and they will come, or I really know what I want, so let me put it in a document now and go away for 10 months and have you build it for me, I think is fatally flawed, has always been fatally flawed. But it's how we like to think. And so, again, if you're hiring somebody because they already know the offerings in the market, they better also have the skills to think ahead to what's next, what's new, and to validate those things with real customers and real prospects enough that you're not just, building the next throwaway.
Great. And so I always think that product managers make very good sailors, because if you're sailing, it's very technical. You have to be constantly tacking. You cannot go straight to your goal. You may have to go very far off course because you're in reaction. You have to know how to use the wind correctly and know how to recognize the water temperature and the speed and the flow and the other boats and everything else. So you're constantly iterating. You're constantly responding, because if you're not, you're drowning, literally.
Right. And in the organizational sense, we know, that a lot of our job is every single day when some sales rep pops up with a really cool idea and a customer that's just about to sign, if we would just add these, new items to the roadmap, it's to be skeptical and conservative and do our homework before we start changing plans. Be willing to change plans, but, a lot of what we do is we buffer our development teams from the elements. The elements here include executives and salespeople and competitors, so that we can get something done rather than letting the wind blow us back and forth and not having a strong hand on the tiller and not having a course, if we can overuse the sailing metaphor here.
Well, I used to have a sailboat. I wasn't a very good captain.
There you go. So, good. What else we have in the stack?
Okay, what else are we asking? So how do you help startups? Startups don't have product managers. When I go to events and there are two people team and they ask me what I do, and the CEO of the two people team says, well, that's what I do. We don't need a product manager. That's what I'm doing. And then when I speak to, startups that are a little further along, or the product is a little further along, they tell me that they need 10 to 15 people before they even not only might have the resources, but could justify having a product manager.
I think that's actually about right. And let me tell that same set of numbers another way, which is if you only have two people at your company, you'd like one of them, or maybe even both of them, to have a lot of product management skills or maybe even experience, but you certainly can't have somebody in a two-person company whose job title says product manager. That makes no sense, right? Having been at a few very, very early stage startups, generally what I'd expect is you've got, a head of technology, and whether that's the CTO or VP engineering or call it what you want, and maybe a few more technologists. So you've got a dev team of three, and you've got one person who's not on the dev team, and he, she is all other things. So call it CEO and HR and finance and fundraising and angel investor relations and product management and legal and facilities and real estate, right? The nature of a startup is you do everything, and you don't specialize because everything has to get done, and it's chaotic and exciting and addictive. And I can't really imagine a two- or a five-person company where somebody's wearing a badge that says product manager. I mean, the titles aren't so important, and there's not enough product management to do. If I fast forward to the 15-person company, and I've parachuted into a lot of them, there's something that happens at about, say, 12 to 15 people, which is that you get departments. So now at 15 people, we have 8 people on the development side of various titles and skills and talents, and they work for somebody who heads up development. And there's a couple or three people on the marketing and sales side, and there's some other jobs. And now we have the makings of two kinds of challenges. One is communications that used to be very free. Everybody sits around the same table and is on the same phone call, and anyone in the company could pick up the phone and do a support call. Suddenly we've got functions and departments and communications gaps where what the marketing and salespeople are hearing is not being well filtered and transmitted to development and back the other way. And so we need someone whose job it is to make sure that the lines of communication are open, that things are framed and filtered and understood. That person doesn't have to be the source of good ideas, but has to be the definitive owner of what's true and a good filter on what needs to pass in both directions. The other thing that happens is the development team is big enough now that they start to lose touch with their customers. And who's the person who makes sure both that he, she is with customers all the time outside the sales cycle, because when customers are being sold, they never really want to tell you the truth, and who's sharing that information with the development team and bringing those folks along in protected ways so that we don't lose sight of our customers and we don't lose sight of who we're building and why we're building and what it's got to do. At the 15 to 20 person stage, you have all these sort of market and communication breakdowns that scream for a person who does product management. And I think if you get to that stage, if you're at 20 or 25 people and there's no one who knows that that's their job, there's all kinds of breakage in all directions. How's that work for you?
Yeah.
Right. I'd make one or two other points. It's really important if you're in that job, and you used the word before, and I use it all the time, you got to be humble. It's not your job as the product management person or the product marketer or whatever we're going to label it to have the best ideas on your own. It's not about being the smartest person. It's about channeling and organizing and herding and getting the good ideas out and reviewed and approved and on their way, in spite of the fact that most of the good ideas came from the developers and the customers, and some of them came from marketing and sales. So, you know, humility first. And to be, you know, honest and honorable about that, that's what you're doing. It's not about ego. I like to joke, it's okay to have an MBA, but honestly, you don't want to be an MBA. You know, it's all about approaching this as, you know, a humble member of a bigger team with a bigger mission to ship great products and make money on them. It's not about thumping your chest and saying, I'm the product manager, and therefore things have to go through me. I'm the product manager, and I get to decide. Right? Nobody believes that.
Nobody would listen.
And nobody would listen. And out there, you know, we've got a lot of people who, regardless of their titles, thump their chests and say, my title says this, and therefore I get to do X. And nobody listens. Of course they don't.
Yeah.
So, you know, how do we make the right things happen instead of be the person recognized for making the right things happen?
Exactly. And that's what I see in startups. You know, we meet monthly for the Startup Product Talks meetup, and I take a survey of who's in the room. For the most part, people don't have product management titles. The UX people, or they're developers, or they're the founders, or now it's happening, is there people who just got into San Francisco and showed up at the meetup with their product from outside of the country.
Right.
It's very exciting. So it's really, we've recognized, look, this is about focusing on product excellence. And what does that mean? We should all be in the inquiry of that, and we should all be collaborating together, focused on that. And if we're not generating revenue, then there's no reason to be.
Right. And
there's no impetus.
to underline that, so I was at an event last week that Marty Kagan had a keynote at, and a shout out to Marty because he's really smart and he's really good at what he does. And he was just identifying again that if you're going to send people out to meet with customers and, you know, do the lean customer development thing or whatever we're going to call it, you don't want to send your product manager out solo. There's probably some trio that's a UI UX design expert and a technologist, somebody who really knows the inner bits, and a product person as a trio that should be out interrogating customers and trying out prototypes and such, because you need a good blend of skills, and there's nearly nobody who has all three of those. And I see our UX, UI design brethren in the same place, which is folks don't understand what they do. They think it's about artwork and the color of the buttons. And, you know, it makes such a huge difference in a product to have somebody with real design and user experience sense be there at the very beginning and getting it right, in the same way that if you have the wrong business model or the wrong target segment, you're going to fail. You know, how do we get UX at the front of the parade instead of at the back redesigning things that are bad?
Exactly. Well, gosh, we're at the end of the hour.
Oh, dear.
Yes. Hey, so come back in less than a year, Rich. And
I'll check my passport.
Yeah, well, of course you could call in from anywhere in the world. Thanks to our tweeters, Mr. Louis Calderon, T. Younglim, retweeting that shout out to Marty Kagan, and emphasizing a lot of the great points that you've made. You've been listening to the Global Product Management Talk with Rich Marinoff. By the way, you didn't mention your new book coming up.
I sure didn't. Nora Ephron famously said, and I mourn her passing, she said, the hardest thing about writing is writing. And I've been on the road doing a lot of customer stuff. I put up an outline for a new book focused on the people who manage product management, thinking that if I went public and I revealed the whole outline, it would help me motivate myself to get more writing done. And sadly, I'm not as far along as I'd like, but let's look for a late 13 or early 2014 book and something new on the shelf.
So when I saw your outline, I thought, well, perhaps you're crowdsourcing the content.
Oh, yeah. So I would love, actually, that's great. So anybody out there who has a chapter from my book that's already written, send it in. I would love to give you credit. It would be a great collaboration. If I can crowdsource this whole thing, we'll have it done by next week. So fire when ready.
Well, we can talk about how to use Twitter to crowdsource that book, because I'll tell you, it's been done. Not in the product management realm, but I'm certainly positioned to do that. I know a lot of tweeters, product management tweeters. So
okay, well, we'll assemble something.
So thank you so much, Rich, for joining us. Thanks to the tweeters. Thank you if you were listening on the call-in. Thank you to the future listeners who will be listening on demand, because this talk, the Global Product Management Talk, is available on blogtalkradio.com/PRODMGMTTALK. There are now more than 80 archives of discussions, although I will say that every one of them, the more recent ones are better. Each one tops the previous one in both audio quality and content. So people who have been on earlier before we started broadcasting out of the studio, come back on. If you'd like to be showcased on the show, shoot me an email, cindy@prodmgmttalk.com, and I will get you scheduled. Coming up on the product events this Friday, I am moderating a webinar with Ed Brill of IBM on becoming the social product manager. That is an AI PMM webinar series on Friday. He's talking about how he turned IBM into a social business and what the journey was. And he is indeed a product manager at the in an enterprise environment, but great guy, and he just came out with a book called Opting In, Lessons in Social Business from a Fortune 500 Product Manager. So join me for that. And go to storefy.com/PRODMGMTTALK to read about what happened at Product Camp on Saturday and see pictures from the pre-Product Camp dinner Friday night, and join the community at Startup Product meetup.com/startupproduct or SF Product Talks, or go to startupproduct.com. Thanks again, Rich, for joining us. Let me shout out to the sponsors for making this all possible. Thank you to the AIPMM, Association of International Product Marketing and Management, www.aipmm.com. Thank you to Sprintly. Don't ask how it's going. Watch how it's going with Sprintly. Sprint.ly. Thank you to Sponsumo.com. Solving the headache of managing conferences and other events. Thank you to Brainmates.com. Boosting people and product performance. And thank you to Studio 132 and BZ Lewis. And thank you to Blame Sally for the music, performing at the Great American Music Hall in San Francisco on May 11, 2013. This is Cindy F. Solomon. If you would like to sponsor the event weekly, the broadcast, which is reaching 20,000 listeners. We also have an Android app. It's out on iTunes, and it's out on all of the major podcast mobile applications. Just search for PRODMGMTTALK. This is Cindy F. Solomon. Thanks for joining us today, and have a great week.